Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fightin' Words on the Fightin' Words News Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of the Police and Fire Services, by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at Bay Pines VA Hospital, the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older, and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. He's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having a problem breaking through any level of athletics, give her a call. She can help you through it. Her office is located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue, Brandon, Florida. Phone number is 813-689-2466. Well, guys, this is a big night for us. We're going to have our friend Mr. Keith Thurman back on. We also want to welcome back on our longtime friend and brother, John Crane, from the southernmost point of the United States. I want to welcome Mr. Ty, Mr. Zito.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, guys, we had one hell of a fight week this week. And, Ty, I'm going to let you start out on that one while I get Mr. Thurman on the radio.
Well, Zito, how's it going today?
Oh, it's going fine. It's going fine.
I guess the first thing I should say is, man, I was wrong. Not dramatically or drastically wrong, but wrong about Prvetnikov and Matisse. As you were too, Zito, you want to speak a little bit on that?
Yes. I was wrong in my prediction. How the fight would go and how Matisse would win, I thought, to be honest, I thought he wasn't disciplined enough to fight that sort of fight. And I was proven wrong. He actually settled himself down. He used very, very wise foot movement. Although flat-footed, all the way flat-footed, he was able to settle down on his power and steer Prvetnikov a bit. Prvetnikov, he's a tough customer. He took a lot of big shots from Matisse. So, that was a heck of a fight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I analyze Matisse, I see his flaws. And typically it's the fact that, you know, from a fallibility standpoint, the flaws I see in him is I typically see him losing balance when he reaches with his punches. But that's one thing that didn't come into play in this fight, because Prvetnikov was always within his wheelhouse, always in Matisse's punching range. And I think that's one factor I kind of overlooked. As well as you, I was really impressed with how disciplined a game plan he stuck to. Again, he's not super fleet of foot. He's not a Keith Thurman of defeat, so to speak. But what he was able to do was he was able to maximize his power and minimize his foot movement because of the maximization of power. And he was able to move just as he needed to move, as opposed to moving like a Chris Algieri. Go ahead and get the job done.
Yeah, he kept Prvetnikov within his own punch range, not at Prvetnikov's punch range.
Exactly.
And he was able to utilize the uppercut, which was a very good tool against Prvetnikov, because he would jab up top, and Prvetnikov has a habit of dipping his head down with his elbows out. And Matisse was able to come right up the middle a few times and hit Prvetnikov with that. But otherwise, he settled him down a bit with his power. And you were mentioning that during the fight, that Prvetnikov, he kept coming. But it was a moment in around the middle of the fight where Matisse hit him and Prvetnikov stopped coming, took a step back to kind of resettle himself, with a thought in his head to where, like, I can't keep taking this.
And Marvin Sasona, who was training Prvetnikov and lieu of Freddie Roach, who's obviously working with Manny Pacquiao, one thing he stated, and not a very certain term, but one thing he stated was that the power of Matisse bothered Prvetnikov. He felt the power, and it made him have to, take different tactics. He acknowledged that Matisse was the hardest puncher he had been in with, and again, Sasona acknowledged that the power was a factor in how Prvetnikov was able to attack him.
And not only the power, it's the fact that he was getting the power there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one or two times, and then you figure out, how he's coming, and you adjust. But Prvetnikov, he's not an adjuster, as we've seen in other fights. He's not an adjuster. And to where Matisse, he was able to adjust in training for the fight. That's where that he adjusted within training, during the training of the fight, to where he was prepared to do what he had to do all fight long, to use his slight foot movement, to, take his angles, his outside angles to land his power. He was able to consistently land his right hand, a nice overhand right, sometimes a straight right.
Yeah, I think there's two good points made there, both Matisse using his reach and then the mention of the footwork, especially when he was on the ropes. He was able to get off the ropes and not be able to take those power punches and able to deliver his own. So two great points, but especially against the ropes, I think he did remarkably well, which gave him the advantage of the fight. But the training came into that, like you mentioned, and it worked out picture perfect for him.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And he went to the ropes at his own pace. He wasn't, you know, speedily bothered like other fighters are with Provetnikov. They're you know, really sense of getting out the way. To where Matisse, even when he backed up to the ropes, it was a slow, flat-footed backup. You know, he wasn't in a hurry. He was just setting up. So, yeah, very valid point.
The only point I would like to make with Matisse is I strongly disagree with the advice that his corner was giving him. You know, just saying, you're well ahead, you're well ahead. And I never liked that in any fight. I'm not the professional myself, but, you know, you don't want to go on and get him comfortable. I felt that he was fighting so well to continue or to start telling him that and then continue to tell him that. I think it hurt him a little bit. He was not able to adjust and stay ahead and obviously win the fight. But it's something that I don't like from a corner. I particularly didn't like with a dangerous fighter or the opponent he was against.
I completely concur with you. And a guy like Provetnikov, who never stops coming, never gives up, and who's walking through tremendous, hellacious power shots that, quite frankly, I don't think there's anyone else at 140 who can walk through. But a guy like that who can, you know, hit with the power and the force he does as well, that's a guy who, when you have him down, you kind of don't want to take your foot off the gas because, just, you know, like a lot of pressure fighters, forward momentum. They really rely on forward momentum. It's the same thing with the momentum of the spirit as well. If that guy senses he can start to work his way back in a fight, he's just going to get more aggressive.
I totally agree also. With a fighter, you always, I mean, especially when they're successful, you always want to keep them going with what works. And to do that, I mean, you don't want to tell them you're ahead. Because that automatically, you know, in the back of that mind says, okay, I could kind of let off, I could take a break, you know. And
Matisse does not have the stylistic attributes to start playing to prevent defense. You know what I mean?
He's not a defensively keen kind of guy. So what happens is, I mean, a lot of times fighters will go ahead and, you know, they'll let off the gas and they'll get caught slipping. They're with their hands down or something, you know, they're at ease saying, this guy can't touch me, back straight away, hands down, the guy step in and clock him. But, you know, I mean, it's all about the motivation. You have to motivate your fighter in the proper direction.
You know, that's it. Provetnikov took some tremendous shots. And, I mean, obviously he's a tough guy with a hell of a chin. I enjoy seeing him fight, but you kind of don't want to see this guy taking that type of punishment from these types of punchers. You know, he definitely needs to work on his ability to cut off the ring, slip punches, parry with his forearms and elbows. He's very limited. And it's going to limit his career as well. He's taking a lot of punishment, you know.
Yeah, we're also joined with Dr. Chris right now. Keith is still in the gym, but I'll get him as soon as he gets out of the gym.
Hey, Dr.
Hey,
Chris.
Hey, Dr. Chris. Guys, how you doing?
Congratulations.
I heard you discussing the fight, but you know, I think the whole thing would have been different had he not got that headbutt early. I mean that really hurt him bad. That really demoralizes you mentally, and you've got to protect that eye. You can't throw. He's a left hooker with a bad cut on the left eye. I mean, he's dying. You know, it's 50% effective. I agree with you. I don't want to see him fight too often like that because he took a lot of shots. Matisse happens to be the better boxer, was able to throw a lot of counter right hands in and hit the kid, especially with the bad eye. I mean, the bad eye and he's throwing right hands. So it was a damn shame because it could have been a much better fight had he not cut that eye. But that's boxing. You never know when the hell it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, same thing happened with Matisse against Garcia. So, you know, that fight looked like it was going one way until he got that eye cut. So I'm sure Matisse was fortunate to be on the other side of that for a change.
Right. Well, some of the toughest guys I've ever seen in the ring have never been able to overcome swollen eyes where you can't see. I'm thinking back to the Roldan fight. When Roldan fought Marvin Hagler, he couldn't see. He was giving Hagler one hell of a fight. And
Ron Roldan was credited for a knockdown. against Hagler. The only person credited to ever knock Hagler down, even though it didn't appear to be a knockdown, but still.
Well, it was a damn shame. It was still, you know, it was a show heart on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it was a, they'll get a rematch. There's no question about it. There'll be a rematch. I don't see how they cannot make. They made that the main event. And,
right.
You know, that eye will heal. And I don't think I don't think he'll cut, you know. I don't think he's a Basilio type guy where he just cuts when you hit him with the sponge, you know what I mean? But I think that they'll fight again. I was sorry to see that, you know, like I say, that cut bothered me. But you got to look at Matisse can box a little bit.
Yeah.
He does have a little bit of an advantage. He does. He can box, and Pavlyuchenkov just wants to rip her head off. And, you know, he poor guy, like you say, he's going to have a short career.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, his eyes were swollen and all that. Because, you know, Matisse, there was no let up in Matisse. He tried to finish him off. I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? There was no, they were going at it, man. And you know what? His Matisse's right hand didn't look like it had a heck of a lot of effect on Pavlyuchenkov. What do you think? I mean, I never really saw him staggered.
No, I mean, there was one time. The most I saw was he caught Pavlyuchenkov with a tremendous right, and Ruslan needed to take a step back and kind of reset it, rocked him, it jarred him. But he never got seriously affected by Matisse's punches. And as we know, Matisse is among, if not the biggest puncher in that division.
And one thing
about
Pavlyuchenkov, he kept coming forward.
Yeah.
I mean, he got hit with tremendous shots, and he kept sort of running into them. So, I mean, as tremendous a chin as he had.
Much, yeah,
he's adding force to it. Oh, my goodness,
tough
he's tough.
And Matisse said, I hit him with everything. He goes, I hit him with everything. He goes, and the guy kept coming.
Well, I think
after a while, it looked like Matisse was just trying to score points and not break his damn hands after a while. Remind me of Tech Scott Larry Holmes
right
play
hand.
Where Holmes.
Yeah, he said he hurt his right hand in the sixth round. That's something that.
Yeah, he wasn't hitting good with it. He was three punch combination, get out, move, three punch combination. You remind me when Larry Holmes fought Cobb, Larry Holmes' hands hurt so bad he couldn't hit him anymore. You know, and Larry said that. He said, my hands hurt so bad, I just gave up. He said, I just figured, let me get out of here in 12 rounds and go home. Get away from this guy before I break both my hands on his head. And, you know, but like
as
you say, it's a shit. Go ahead.
As good as the fight was, the only thing I will say is that if Matisse can't go on and get a step up or whatever, he's really going to have to go on and consider this fight again because, you know, it's a difficult opponent. And, you know, he beat him once, so hopefully this gets him to another level. But if it doesn't, I think the purse will be good, and it will be a main event fight. And hopefully it's just like it was this last go-around.
Well, the one thing is Matisse has made no bones about it that he was chasing titles, especially ever since the Danny Garcia loss, that he's chasing titles. We know Lamont Peterson's IBF title is now going to be vacated because of his loss to Danny Garcia. Whether Danny Garcia can make the weight or not, again, is something else. So, honestly, I don't see Matisse looking back to Pavlyuchenkov. I don't think Pavlyuchenkov has, at this point, anything he wants. Like you said, Rob, if those title matches, because he really does, a belt means something to Matisse, and if he doesn't get that particular title match, then I could see him taking a purse. But I think he's always looking to claim the belts. And so I don't see him necessarily looking back towards Matisse. At the same time, I don't think Pavlyuchenkov's people are in a rush to put Ruslan in with a puncher like Matisse again, too. Again, a rematch is always available because it's always a thrilling fight. But I think right now both guys think it may be for the better to go other ways, which I agree. I don't think Pavlyuchenkov needs to fight Matisse back-to-back.
Right. Amir Khan moved up. Now you got, what do you got left in a 140? You got that one kid coming up, a damn good boxer, puncher. I can't think of his name offhand, but the 140 has been thinned out. I don't think Garcia can fight at 47. I don't think
no.
he is hard enough. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think he's strong enough.
No.
I think he'll get beat at 47. He'll get beat, and
with,
so maybe you'll have another Garcia Matisse rematch.
What troubles me about Garcia, you know, obviously the kid is a winner. He really is. I don't think he's won every fight he's been in a ring with. I think he's been gifted a few decisions, two of the last three, quite honestly. But with that said, the guy, you know, he knows how to win. He does everything okay in the ring. What I noticed, though, is he doesn't fight well backing up, and he doesn't fight well coming forward either. And so he kind of has this wheelhouse. And within that wheelhouse, within his punching range, he can be a dominant fighter. But against a slick boxer, he has a hard time catching him. And against a guy that can pressure him, he doesn't fight well going backwards. He's going to go up to 147, and he's not going to be able to again, I think his power has always been a little overrated. I think his power is more so based on the Amir Khan. There you go, the Amir Khan knockout. I don't think he's a big puncher. Everybody says he is, and he's not going to come and put a dent.
I don't think he's a hard puncher at all.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be putting dents in guys like Robert Guerrero and Keith Thurman and these guys. You know, I think he again, his father's his trainer, and it just seems like he hasn't quite progressed fundamentally to the next level yet, and I don't think he's strong enough at 147.
Well,
he's no better now than he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and at 140,
exactly.
you do got Terrence Crawford at 140, which I think would be an interesting fight. I give the advantage to Terrence Crawford. I don't think anyone wants a part of him as well as he's fighting right now. But if you're not going to go Garcia, I don't think you step down to, you know, give yourself up for an Adrian Broner or something like that. So
right,
I think
right.
if he's going to eye titles, then the fight to eye is Terrence Crawford. Now, whether Crawford takes that fight or not is another story.
Right, right. Crawford is going to do with the vacant title as well. See what to do with the vacant title. Because, if Heyman's controlling the IBF title, which he probably is, then that could be a showcase fight on NBC for somebody for the title. So.
I think Matisse has no trouble making 140. I think that's where his future is.
No,
he's
not
tall enough for that.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He's not tall enough for the 47. But he could. I'd like to see a Garcia rematch. I don't think Matisse had a fair shot with that swollen eye. It went early, and I think he'd give Garcia one hell of a fight if he could get away with that without hurting his eyes.
I would favor him over Garcia more now. I mean, I thought he was a slight favorite, but
right.
I kind of thought Garcia was going to win. I remember predicting Garcia to win. I'd favor him over Garcia now, though, because again, Garcia to me hasn't regressed, but he hasn't advanced at all. Seems like he peaked with the Matisse fight, and then from that point on, he just hasn't been the same fighter. And he's having a hard time making 140, and like we said, I don't think he's going to be a really effective 147-pound fighter either. So,
I don't
like calling fighters overrated, because as far as fighting goes, I like you to get all of the acclaim because of all
who
the pain.
Who called anybody overrated?
I'm going to try to make a point. But Danny Garcia, to a certain point, gets a little too much credit for being where he's at. I think he got a lot of stats off of the Amir Khan win. Ever since then, he's either hasn't fought anyone or he's lost, and he's gotten
decisions. Matisse too, yeah, Matisse.
That was a good win. I think it was a good win for him.
That was
a good win. But
best
Danny
win.
Garcia, to be honest, he is who he is. He doesn't have one particular style. He's very flat-footed. He doesn't really get on his toes, but he'll still try to box from the outside to a certain extent without moving his feet at all. He seems to try to be slick in that Philly slickness to a certain point, but that's not his build.
He's not slick at all.
Yes, he's not slick at all. He throws pretty good punches, but he tends to come wide a lot, and he tends to square up often.
You know what the kid is? He's gritty. He's tough and he's gritty. That's what he is.
He's a fighter.
He's gritty, he's tough. Yeah, he's a fighter. He's a gritty fighter. He's gritty, he's tough. He has good fundamentals, but he just...
And he's, And he's smart. Danny's smart. He knows how to not have the flow totally taken away from him in a fight.
And he fights within himself, too. He really does. He's very comfortable fighting within himself. And you know what? It's funny because Bob mentioned Terrence Crawford, and that's one thing I love about Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford is very comfortable and patient and fights within himself. I love just his poise in the ring at such a young age.
I like Terrence Crawford, too. I don't think I wouldn't necessarily pick him over the elite in the 140 just yet, just because
I need to see a little bit more. He's got DeLorme and Bradish Prescott on his resume at 140, but obviously, you know, there's some. I mean, Lamont Peterson's making 140. He weighed 165 for the fight with Garcia. So, I mean, obviously, there's still some monsters at 140 too.
Crawford received the BWAA Fighter of the Year award, the Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah.
Yes, he deserves it.
Yes, he does.
He deserves it. Terrence is a tremendous fighter who can do it all in the ring. He's a tough guy, and he has a tendency to stand in a bit unprotected, but he sees things coming pretty good, and he could counter well. What impressed me in the DeLorme fight was basically a sense of timing. I thought DeLorme was taking some rounds from him. That Terrence, he just was measured. He didn't throw a lot. DeLorme was a little more active. But when Terrence figured him out, he took him out. It was as simple as that. And that's impressive to me.
You know what impressed me about Crawford? What's that, Dr. Chris?
He's a patient fighter. Things aren't going his way the first two or three rounds. He knew he was better.
Yeah.
He said, I know I'm going to get this guy. And he just waited and boom. I mean, he's very patient.
He did the same thing against Gamboa. Gamboa, you know, for all his flaws, is a tremendous physical specimen at that size.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the same thing. Gamboa was out quicking him and you know, doing what he does. And the thing about Crawford is, you know, he always maintains his poise and he just adjusts. He just makes adjustments. And what I see in him is the supreme confidence he has in his skill set. He really does.
Yeah, I noticed that about him because he's the kind of guy that don't have to see anybody's fight films. He'd go right in the ring and two or three rounds he'll figure his opponent out. That's the kind of guy he is. And I was impressed with his patience and his confidence. And that's what you have to be. You have to be both. You know, these guys come out, they're all pepped up in the first two or three rounds, and then when the fight goes on, and they're not doing any good, then they lose confidence, and then the more confident fighter seems like he comes on. So I'm impressed with that kid. He's going to be somebody to reckon with in that 140, no question about it.
Well, you know, Amir Khan, Bob, you mentioned Amir Khan. What do you think guys think about Amir taking on Chris Algieri?
I don't like the fight. It's just a payday. It's a payday for Amir Khan. I mean, look, Pacquiao knocked him down how many times? And Pacquiao isn't the puncher he once was. I don't think it's just a payday. That's all it is. It's keeping busy until something pops up.
And you know what it is too? It's a safe payday for him too. And I think that's I was saying last week that Amir Khan's career is going to come down to him being a wild goose chaser because he's chasing Pacquiao, he's chasing Floyd. And at the meantime, he's kind of sacrificing his own dollar signs and legacy to do so. He's sitting on the sidelines, and when he takes the fight, he tends to take a safer fight so he can always be in position for these big fights that he's just not getting.
I think his weight will stabilize at 47. That's as high as he can go. And I think he'll reach his peak in 6 months. He wants Mayweather and a big payday. That's all he wants. You know, you could see it a mile away. You know, he wouldn't want to fight Keith. He wouldn't want to get in the ring with Keith. You know?
Chris Algieri is the luckiest fighter in the world. He's the luckiest. if there can be such a thing as a lucky boxer, he's the luckiest fighter in the world. Off of one style matchup that he defeated. He defeated the style. Off of that one style matchup, he gets a fight with Pacquiao, and next he gets a fight with Amir Khan. I mean, he's going to get beat up again, But, I mean, he's making his money just off of that.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, it's absolutely boring fight. And, you know, predicting the future, in a little headway, I don't foresee him fighting maybe Pacquiao, depending on how that fight goes. And Mayweather, if he sticks to his word and he got one fight after this, I'm not sure that's a fight either. So I don't know where Khan goes, but it's got to be better than Algeri.
You know, he was offered a June date at Wembley against Cal Brook, and that's the fight he wasn't looking to do. It's not time for that fight yet, he said. So, you know, obviously the Algeri is a safe, stay-busy fight that keeps him in position for that big fall fight. Obviously, first of all, Floyd fights in September. It coincides with Ramadan and makes it tough for America.
Yeah.
And Floyd has said he's sticking to that date. The Pacquiao fight is something Roach has recently said, you know, that's something we'd be interested in. But, again, he's waiting for his lottery ticket, and he's not kind of working his way towards that point. And at the same time, he's turned down some tremendous fights. Again, him and Kell Brook at Wembley would have been huge. I think June would have been a little soon, too, but that would have been a mega event. But what it is he's bringing – so Algeri's going to fight, again, Amir Khan. This is only Algeri's second fight at welterweight. We know what happened to his first fight. That was with Pacquiao. So then what's going to happen is after Khan beats Algeri, he's going to scream that he wants one of these big fights when his welterweight resume still has not too much of substance on it. So he kind of shoots himself in the foot. I think he kind of overanalyzes his position instead of just getting out and fighting.
And I think a good fight would be Amir Khan and Marcos Maidana, a rematch at welterweight. I think that would be an incredible fight. Both fighters have done different things after their first fight. Marcos Maidana, the loser of that first fight, has probably progressed a little bit more in his career at this point to me, to where Amir Khan's a bigger name.
That fight became a moot point when he gave Floyd a good match and then lost. That's when that became a moot point, because he gave Floyd a good match. And if he had beat Floyd, Amir might take the fight. But he lost to Floyd but gave Floyd a tough match? Oh, no, Amir's not taking that fight. That's too rough. That's too dangerous. For not that much money? No. Too dangerous.
Yeah, Khan would have to beat Algeri convincingly to get a shot at Mayweather. And Mayweather wants no part of Keith. He wants no part of a hard body puncher. I think Mayweather would retire before he fights a young hard puncher.
I don't think Mayweather wants any part of Amir Khan at this point, honestly.
And I think this is the end of the road for Mayweather. This is it. This is the cash-off fight.
Listen, gentlemen, I like you all, but we will stop right there. Mayweather's going to have one more fight, and it's going to be obviously going to be a mega payday. But if he beats Pacquiao, what more does he have to? And I'm going to say it. What more does he have to prove? But he does have one fight. He has one fight on the contract, and I don't think he's going to let that fight go. I really think he's going to fulfill that contract. And if it's a close fight with Pacquiao, obviously the money, the big money is going to be a rematch. But if he dominates, I do think that Khan has an opportunity to fight Mayweather, just because the worldwide event and where he can draw the money over from Europe and all that good stuff there with Khan. I do not think, though, he'll go take on a young man in Thurman. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. It's not going to be a huge payday, and Thurman's a very dangerous fighter, and he's going for that 50-0.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think you're going to see Floyd take on any of those young gun welterweights if he were to win. Keith Thurman. If he wins, what he's going to look to do. Now, I know it's already supposedly stated that Cotto's going to fight Canelo. But if he wins, look for him to try to maneuver his way to that middleweight title shot against Cotto, quite possibly, because Cotto's fighting Daniel Gill. So I would not be surprised. That's what I see being his swan song. Which to me would be the perfect move. You beat Pacquiao, who has been your nemesis basically on social media, and then you go ahead and win the middleweight title, or fight for it at least. I think that would be the perfect swan song. I don't think Floyd has I don't think he has any desire for a passing of the torch match against Amir Khan. I don't think that's the type of athlete he is, and I don't think that's the type of person he is. I think he's going to look to make one. If he fights one more time, it's going to be to make a statement, either a rematch with Pacquiao or to go for a middleweight title, or, you know, it's going to be something like that. I don't see him taking a fight like Sugar Ray Leonard did against Terry Norris just to say, I still can do it. I think he's, like he said, he doesn't have anything. I don't think he has anything to prove to himself, and I don't. He doesn't strike me as that type of athlete.
Well, what do you think about tonight, guys?
Oh man, I'm looking forward to tonight. Did you guys know that Brian Jennings actually? Not that this matters, but did you guys know that Brian Jennings actually has a listed a 3-inch reach advantage with Klitschko? He's 84. Klitschko's 81.
I think the key word is listed.
Klitschko looked awful big. He looked awful big alongside that guy. I don't think he can overcome. I don't think Jennings can overcome that, the physical advantage and everything. I just don't think he could do it.
He's got a nice payday
coming, but.
Not only does he have a physical advantage, experience, as well as technical and fundamental advantage too. I mean, the guy puts those better in every area except, you know, right now, youth and athleticism.
One thing is, Brian Jennings is going to have to take the fight to Klitschko. He's going to have to take the fight, and I just don't see how Brian's good taking a fight to a guy right now at a certain level. But to cut the ring off on Klitschko, you're going to have to absorb punishment. And Jennings isn't the kind of guy to slip and bend at the waist to what you need to do against Klitschko to get inside. He's a little stiff. He squares up often. And you just can't present charges like that to Klitschko.
Yep. The fireworks this week between Shannon Briggs and Deontay Wilder.
You know, it's funny. I saw Shannon Briggs at the press conference. I read that he got into it with Deontay Wilder, but I didn't read what happened. What happened?
Oh, go on to Fight News. They've got the whole thing down on camera. He started a little banner back and forth, and then he said, you know, this is what I want. It got to a point where he took his hat off and almost hit him. And Wilder said, bring it on anytime. You know, and Shannon was, you know, screaming out his number. Just call me. That's all you got to do is call me. I'll fight you.
Shannon McKinney.
Deontay will smooth Shannon Briggs out. Yeah. Shannon Briggs, that young man is too big, too young, hits too hard, and he's going to get it there. Shannon does not need that in his life. He needs the money, apparently, but he doesn't need that drama.
Shannon Briggs is the most intelligent, most genius heavyweight, middleweight, anyweight fighter on the planet. You know why? Because we're talking about him. When was the last time Shannon Briggs was in a relevant fight, he almost got beat half to death fighting Vitaly Klitschko. But we're talking about him in the same breath as Vladimir the Champion. That tells you, man, he's been brilliant with his strategy. I mean, the whole thing in the water with the boat, that still tickles me, so...
No, the real thing in the restaurant. I eat what you eat, champ.
Boy, I mean, he's been, you know, he's definitely kept his name out there. And he's, you know, he's racked up 6 wins against, you know, no-namers. I don't like, I don't disparage anybody that steps in the ring, but against no-namers. And there was some talk of him fighting somebody of relative worth, but so far it hasn't materialized.
Hmm.
Hey, you know
I got it up on for him. That big white guy with the 6'6" or 6'7" guy that fought for our buddy last week. You know, Cunningham. What's that guy? Fury. Tyson Fury.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't want to.
Shannon Briggs in there together.
First of all, that would be a hell of a press conference. That would be a hell of a promotional tour.
Fury will start singing.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a promotional tour. If Fury get in there and look like Muhammad Ali on Shannon Briggs, he'd dance all around.
That fight would draw a lot of attention, though, you know? Mm-hmm. And Fury's got to step up some. some sooner or later he's got to step up, you know. That'd be funny. I'd like to see the press conference. They would. Oh, God, that'd be comical. But I'm just thinking who he could fight.
Fury's a guy, yeah, though, who I've actually liked the way he's kind of developed. He's a big guy, but he doesn't, you know, he's not the most athletic guy. He's, you know, not a Vladimir Klitschko who's a, you know, walks with a bound. He's a big kind of lumbering, lanky, gangly guy. And he's really, if you watch some of his earlier fights and watch him now, he's really developed his skill set. And now what he's doing, whereas if you remember the fight with Stevie Cunningham, he was getting outboxed. He was getting outboxed. And he just beat Stevie Cunningham essentially by grabbing him and holding him so he could just continue to hit him. But this is a guy who's really, one thing I'll say is he talks a lot, but he's really appeared to work on his craft. And he's, you know, significantly better than he was 3 or 4 years ago. I don't think he doesn't beat a Vladimir, but I do think that, honestly, I think he beats Deontay Wilder.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be curious to see what he does and what he turns into.
Well, you know, the one thing about Fury too, Dr. Chris, is Fury is a fighter too. That's one definitive thing about him. He's not just a big guy. He's a big, tough, gritty guy too. So,
mm-hmm. I told Steve last week, take an easy fight. Christ, how much weight did Tyson Fury have on him?
Why'd you
pick somebody your own size one of these times, you know? Jesus. Every time I turn around, he's fighting the worst opponent for him. And then he could, but I guess that's his nature. He just, you know, he figures it might be his last fight, his last good payday, so he takes it. But I enjoyed talking to that guy. He was a lot of fun to talk to.
The funny thing is, with Stevie fought Glaskov, and they both got to the ring, they kind of had robes on. I'm like, okay, they're about the same size. They take off the robes, it's like, no, they're not. You know what I mean? Glaskov was just significantly thicker. I mean, Stevie's put together, but, you know, he's put together like, I guess like a male fitness model, where Glasgow's put together like a bear. You know, he just wasn't
right,
as tall.
Right.
And I mean,
one thing you can say is Stevie, I mean, taking on these big guys, he's proven himself in a heavyweight position.
Stevie's only lost to Tyson Fury. He beat Glaskov and he beat Ademi.
Yeah.
He just didn't get the decision.
Yeah, but he's fighting punchers and all. I mean, he's proven himself adept in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, he beat Ademi over in Poland, too.
Yeah.
You know, he and Ademi had a great series of fights. They really did.
They did.
I mean, they got in the ring and just made magic together.
Mm-hmm.
That Cunningham fight with the Polish guy, that was a hell of a fight.
Chris, I just got off the phone with Dan Birmingham. He said that he's sorry that Keith can't make it this week. He'll make it next week. They ran very late, and Keith's still on his final half hour of practice. So,
you know, it's always good to hear that the fighter's in the gym.
Yes. Yeah, well, especially on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
What is Keith Thurman at? I mean, you're still discussing, looking at for his next fight. I know it hasn't been announced yet from what I gather, but what do you all think, or who do you think he's going to take on?
I know when we had Dan Birmingham on the show, Dan Birmingham said something that kind of, you know, echoed Keith. He said, you know, we're looking at Madonna. He said, we would love to get Marcos Medina in the ring. And I mean, you know, I think that's bold. And, you know, not many people are calling out Marcos Medina.
Thurman's called them all out. I mean, Thurman has called Mayweather out, called out Pac-Man. I mean, he's ready and willing and just wants an opportunity. But, boy, that'd be a statement win to beat Medina.
Yeah, I think that's a bad
style matchup for Marcos Medina. I think that's a terrible style matchup for Medina.
It makes sense for a boxer to call out Amir Khan, Floyd, and Mayweather. They're the, you know, but Marcos Medina doesn't bring a lot of money. He's just a rugged fight. I think that shows you where his mentality is.
He's not a good opponent for Keith. Keith would hammer him silly. Madonna's got that sloppy right hand. I mean, he's got a lot of guts. He's not a true big welderweight either. I don't think he's an opponent for Keith.
No, Keith is not going to back straight up to the ropes like Floyd tends to do. You know what I mean?
Floyd relies on his defense. So you just let a guy like Madonna, I just keep punching. All Keith is going to do is Jim Mangles, and then when Madonna turns, he's going to hit him real hard, really, really hard.
Yeah, Keith's too much for him. It's too much for him.
Keith has the tools and will use all of the tools to stop that kind of pressure fighter. I don't care how good you can take a punch. That's going to stop you. That's going to stop you. It's not put you to sleep.
Well, I know we're talking about Keith Thurman stopping me, but is there anyone here that doesn't think that Keith Thurman could stop one fighter that's out there with his power, in his agility and ability? I mean, he is a tremendous young fighter that many are going to run for a long time until they have no choice.
Yeah.
Well, he'll wear you out in the body. He'll wear you out in the body if he stays on his flats of his feet. He developed the right hook against the left-hander, the last guy was left-handed. I never saw anybody counter Guerrero with right hooks to the stomach. I mean, he nailed him. It went right through his back. I mean, you would be afraid to throw that punch, afraid of getting a straight left right in the face. But Keith took the offense when he came in, boom, and he hit him a couple of ungodly shots. And I saw him wilt that other guy. I saw him wilt, and I figured about the seventh or eighth round, Keith's going to take him out. But for some reason or other, he I don't know. I don't know. The fight changed a little bit. He didn't keep bearing down on him, you know. But I think Keith could have taken him out that night had he pressured him. I really do. After that seventh round, I mean, he was beat up.
Well, you know, Guerrero got saved by the bell that round. So he was on his way out. You know what I mean? He really got saved by the bell.
He really was on his way.
But he's a tough guy. Guerrero's an absolutely tough guy.
He don't have enough guns to stay in there with Keith.
It's got a little more size, a little more speed, a little more power. Then maybe something. But he has skill, but he's not the biggest welterweight. And sometimes physically, you'll be outmatched.
Yeah, he's not big enough. Amir Khan has grown. Amir Khan's got a big frame. Amir Khan can carry 47 very easily, I think. But I don't, you know, and he's got a good jab.
When the Cotto fights, I'll throw Amir Khan was calling out for Canelo. So I guess he thinks he could go ahead and make 154, too.
Oh.
Which I'm sure he could, but I think he'd kill him.
But I don't think he'd be very effective. I don't think he's strong enough for 154.
Or Canelo.
He'd be crazy to get that. And that's a tough division now. They're your old middleweights. Those guys are coming in at 54 and then weighing in fight night 165, 168. They're big when they get in that ring. And that'd be too much for Khan. If he dehydrated after the fight, he wouldn't come in very, very high. He'd be stretching it trying to get up to 154.
Well, again, remember, we had a catchweight at 143 between Peterson and Garcia because it was rumored, you know, well, it wasn't rumored. Garcia was, you know, straight up saying he was having problems making 140. And then Peterson weighed, you know, rehydrates to 165. So, I mean, you know, these guys are big. And you know what?
Yeah.
And I love Terrence Crawford. And I think he has, you know, from what I'm seeing, he has a pretty complete skill set. We're going to see what kind of fighter he is because he's moving. He's going to be facing some big guys at 140. Could you imagine Terrence Crawford against Provitnikov? I think he beats Provitnikov, but is he going to have to do like everyone else and basically survive Provitnikov? Matisse is the only one I've seen put a little hurt on him.
He'd find a way to beat him. He'd outbox him. He'd outbox him. He'd let him away. He'd take advantage of it. If not, he'd just take a decision. That's why I say he's very patient. You know, he's a smart kid.
I think Provitnikov is kind of like the truth tester of that division, though. He'll let you know whether you belong there or not. You know what I mean?
I don't know if Terrence Crawford will match up against Matisse well.
What time's the fight come on tonight? They got a good preliminary on? A preliminary card?
It's Saddam Ali, who's coming off his biggest win. But I forget the guy he's fighting. So I'm assuming it's a showcase, more of a showcase fight for him than a step up, because he really had a step up just recently. So.
Uh-huh. And I like Saddam Ali. He's good. He's going to be. I think he's going to be something. We have to still see how tough he is, but he handled Carlos Abreu pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And that impressed and surprised me, actually. That really impressed and surprised me. And to that point, I hadn't been too impressed with Saddam Ali. He just seemed like another blindingly fast guy who was a little out of control and a little tepid at times. You know what I mean? Kind of like a what's the guy's name at 140 was with Top Rank? Like Jesse Vargas. Kind of, you know, like one of those kind of guys, you know, where you could see the talent, but just was something missing. He really put it together against Abreu. You know, Mikey Garcia, former 126, 130-pound champion, was scheduled to eventually move to 140. The rumor is that he's going to be making his return at 147.
Oh. And that could be eye in a Pacquiao fight.
Yeah. But I Mikey hasn't fought at 135 yet.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
140.
And you know what? And it always scares me when a fighter's been out of the ring for a year, and then when they come back, they say, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna go up 2 weight classes." So.
Hey guys, what did you think of Chavez? Sitting on his butt.
Oh, how did we forget about that?
He was in over his head.
Oh my God, how did we not leave the show with that?
He should have known that and been in camp. Because obviously he wasn't prepared to fight that guy at all. He came in ready to fight himself. Like he fought against the mirror all camp long because he just walked up with his hands down his head, bent over to the guy.
He fought an awful fight.
Awful.
Von Farish, 6'4", and he stuck his head in his chest. He's throwing the left hook around. It was nothing more than an arm punch, barely. And he had no effect on Von Farish. If Von Farish had a good uppercut, he would have took his head off. But he beat him anyway. But he quit in the corner. I mean, he didn't. He knew he was in over his head. He just said, "To hell with it." I took enough shots.
I mean, he was breathing heavy in the third. He was moving around. He was using energy that for no reason at all. It looked like he just went in there like, I could just run over this guy whenever I want.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, he didn't train for anything else. His father advised him against taking the fight.
Damn right.
Zito and I were watching the fight, and in the middle of watching the fight, when it started getting bad, you know, we started speculating, you know, how does this end? Because it was obviously headed towards one end. Chavez is still damn tough. I mean, physically, he's just tough. But we looked at each other like, if he gets hurt, he's going to quit on a stool. You knew that. Because he was going to go sit down and say, you know what? First of all, you knew he was going to get up. He wasn't going to take a 10 count. There's too much pride for that. But you knew that once he went to the stool, you knew that was it, though. Because he's like, I don't have to take this. And that was his mentality. That was his mentality when he was training. I don't have to take this. And
I heard him say, Dad was right. I should have listened to him. <You know? laughs> I should have listened to my father. Let me get the hell out of here. He's smarter than I thought he was.
You're going to move up to 175 to take on a top 10 ranked light heavyweight when you haven't done jack at 168, and you really didn't do anything at 160 either, actually. So.
Right. You didn't do anything. Why he ever did that, stepped up to 175. I mean,
you know what?
If Adonis Stevenson couldn't take him out, sure in hell Chavez wasn't going to take him out.
What people don't, Chavez is not even at 160, he was a big guy, but he wasn't a big puncher. You know what I mean? He'd get on you and wear on you, you know, and wear you down. But he wasn't a big puncher, so he wasn't going to move Von Farish. Von Farish proved to be tough at 175 already. And then on top of it, the reason why Chavez is fighting at 175 is because it takes too much training to get down to 160 or even 168.
Exactly.
If Chavez,
I think you're right.
He, his fight weight is not 175. If he would train properly, have a proper training camp, do what he's supposed to do before a fight, then he'd be fighting like at 168, maybe even 160, depending. This guy, you cannot fight at your fighting weight because you don't have the stamina. You're not training. You're not doing your road work.
Sure.
You're not, you don't have your cardio up. And so how are you fighting at your walking round weight? Of course he's going to be breathing heavy in the third round. Of course he's going to – all of his technique is going to go. And apparently,
and to be honest, we don't even know if he's going to pass the pre-fight drug test. We don't even know if he passed that because he has a history of not passing those too. So,
the way
he could
fought,
have been smoking all
I can't
he fought like he smoked all Camp and 8 Cheerios.
He fought like he just ran. They just brought guys in for sparring and he could run over nothing like the guy he was fighting. Nothing like the guy he was fighting. He squared up all the time. That's how he got knocked down. Squaring up.
He's a guy who you're actually literally seeing regress fundamentally before your eyes because he's lazy. You know what
exactly.
I mean, think about when he fought Andy Lee and what he looked like. You know, think about what he looked like against Von Ferre. He's just not training the way he should be, and it's had a detriment on his career. I think it's really interesting to see where he goes now. He still can get a good fight because of his name, but you know what? The Frotch fight, Gennady Golovkin fight, the Andre Ward fight, Chavez as that big money B-sider, that's out the window. He's lost that. When his diehard fans are throwing stuff at him, he's done. He's done.
He's going into boxing with the Allen Iverson mentality. Practice?
You can't do that in boxing. No, you can't practice in boxing. You can't.
I mean, you could be talented, yes, but if you don't know that art, you're going to get your behind whooped. Simple point.
Chavez Jr. is not as dead, but he's damn talented. To fight at the level he's kind of been fighting at. And you've seen his training camps. He doesn't train that hard.
They have to come get him, and then he doesn't go to the gym. They have to move furniture in the hotel room for him to spar? No. They're not going to win like that.
And you know what the funny thing is? This is on camera. When you have the cameras rolling, you usually put your best foot forward.
I don't think Goosen can control him anymore. I don't think he listens to anybody.
Well, it was funny. I thought it was interesting choosing Goosen to train him. And I like Goosen. I like Goosen because I was a Michael Nunn fan, and Goosen was Michael Nunn's trainer. And Goose is known to be kind of a disciplinarian, so I thought it would work to a certain extent, but oh well.
Yeah.
He is the proverbial silk sheet fighter. He really is. You know what I mean? He is. And I'm not saying he didn't grow up tough because, obviously Floyd grew up in the boxing world, but he didn't have those experiences. Chavez kind of, he fights as if he doesn't have to. He trains as if he doesn't have to. And when the fight got tough, he said, I don't have to go back out there. And he didn't.
Yeah. Yep. I got a kick out of the fight. I got a kick out of the whole fight, watching it. The whole thing
you
developed. Then when he quit in the corner, I died laughing. I said, oh, my God. What the hell? Goosen wanted to hit him in the head with a damn frying pan. If he had one, he'd have belted him on top of the head with it, because he didn't listen. They had all that discussion in there.
Oh.
Basically, what it boiled down to, what the hell? I ain't going to get up and go out there and get the hell beat out of me. I made a mistake. Now I know. Yes. So why? I don't want to prove I'm wrong twice. By letting him knock me the hell out, that dope.
But I hope this teaches him. I hope this teaches him the seriousness of it.
Yeah, this guy had been coasting and either winning fights or, being gifted fights, but nobody had been able to beat this kid up. You know what I mean? This kid got beat up the other night. And that can be, it can do one of two things psychologically. It can motivate him or make him say, maybe this isn't for me. This is a little too harder than I need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he's like, Dad was right. He was too big. I want a rematch at 168. Okay, well, are you going to get down? First of all, you don't need a rematch. Second of all, can you even get to 168? And you pulled the guy to 173 to try to drain him, and that didn't work. So, I don't know. The thing is, I like Chavez Jr. too. I really do. I, I, I like that he's a goofy kid. You know, he doesn't apply himself. But if that's what he chooses to do, that's on him. I'm not going to spend my hard-earned money on a pay-per-view for Chavez Jr. because, you know, why should I? He half-asses it. But I like the kid. I think he's, you know, he comes across as jovial and goofy to me. And when he actually fights, he brings a fight. But, you know, he never maximized his talent, and I don't think at 29 he's going to start. This was supposed to be the fight. This was the one. I have a kid now. I've matured. I've learned. This was supposed to be the fight, and he looked worse than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got it in anyway. We couldn't let that one go.
Oh, man, I'm glad you brought that up. That was really funny last weekend.
I enjoyed that. I'm watching this. I'm saying, what the hell's going on here? Oh, my God. He stuck his head in his chest and threw left hooks out so wide around the side. And by the time the punch landed, he couldn't break an egg. He couldn't break an egg. They weren't having any effect. Oh, he's going to the body.
His feet were so close together, and he was so squared up. It looked like somebody tied a shoestring together. You know, he tied a kid's shoestring together. That's how he was standing. I was like, "What the hell is he doing?"
He'd walk.
If you
want to
get your face
hand,
banged
then.
Up, square up in the ring. That's the first step towards getting hammered in your face. You know, because you're open
hammered
every
everywhere.
Punch.
Hammered everywhere. Your face,
you
both sides,
damn
your
tough
body.
To square up. You got to be damn tough. I don't know. Oh my God, I know Goosen wanted to kill him. I know.
So where does Chavez go from here, guys?
I can tell by the look on his face.
But where does Chavez go? Who does he fight next? Does he go to 168? What does he do? What do you guys think he does?
I think he may need to stop.
I don't think he may need to stop.
He's got to go home and think about his career, which way it's going to go, if he's going to apply himself, you know, or whatever. You know, it seems to me he's got a lot of distractions in his life, and he doesn't need any of them. You know, that's what it seems like to me.
Absolutely.
So, time will tell.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're up against our time limit here, so I know Chris, you've got your sausage to cook. And,
I cooked the sausage. My wife threw the black beans in there.
There you go.
And I'm going to go over there and probably get a good case of heartburn.
Good going down.
See you guys next Saturday. All right, take it easy now.
Thanks a lot. Wow, what a great show. It's a shame that Keith couldn't join us, but he will join us next week, according to Dan. Guys, I appreciate everything you've done. Again, this week it's been a fantastic this is always the fastest hour of the week for me. It just flows, and I'm glad John was able to join us. John works for the county and is not always off duty on Saturdays, but he'll be here next week too.
Next week is the week, isn't it?
Yeah. The week, yes.
Yeah.
And you know he won't miss that. He is without a doubt the wildest Mayman in the East Coast of Florida.
If I didn't know that, I could tell when we started talking Floyd Mayweather. That was his guy.
Yeah, he has he has a direct line into their camp. I'm not really sure. Yeah, John used to write for Doghouse Boxing also. And he's got somebody in there that he calls on a regular basis and sees how things are going, and then he lets us know. So next week should be great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. Now, when you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, a simple wink, a handshake, a thank you, means the world of good to everybody in uniform. The programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bager, Patrolman Jeffy Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. MIT Officer Sean Collier. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Garbin Springs Police Department. And Philadelphia Officer Robert Wilson. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sona shenevoratfet Hakuigagen ma'ilma
Quality and purity standards. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.